The Guardian. Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly. Today, Premier League. Gunners throw in towel. Narrowly miss after what they're calling worst performance with Wigan since Danny LaRue. In other news, Gordon Brown not only man depressed by polls after Fabianski flap. Elsewhere, Spurs' slump continues with disappointing 2-0 thrashing of league leaders Chelsea, while at Eastlands, passion and pride in the weekend's big head-to-head. But enough about Neville and Scholes smooching. How was the derby? Next up, Champions League semi-finals. Bayern warm up with a 7-goal thrashing of Hanover, while Barcelona have to take the bus all the way to the San Siro for their interclash. Not to worry, Jose's waiting to park it for them. We hear from Sid in Spain, get the latest on Italy's title race after Sunday's dramatic Rhone derby, and hear your posts and all the raw thrills of lower league action too, with Sheffield derby drama and promotions for Rochdale, Notts County and Norwich. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Hello, everybody. On board today, we have Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. John Ashton.
Hi, James.
Hi, John. Nice to see you. And nice to see you, Paul McInnes.
Aloha, James.
Aloha to you, Paul. How is your work with the Manchester United Supporters Trust going?
I think it's a must, isn't it,
to
read my depressing article, which kind of cobbled together a few ideas about metrosexuality and then pegged them all to Gary Neville.
Right, you're talking about the kissing. I was referring to the Norwich scarf that you wear.
Oh, the Norwich scarf that
I'm
wearing.
But of course, the kiss. Of course, you are the author of today's seminal, When Men's Lips Meet.
109 comments and counting, which
and
for
counting.
Me is quite good.
My favourite so far from the one that I've read is this by Green Flash. Poor bastards will never get into a bed and breakfast again. How very, very true. I say it's funny because it's more of a sad commentary on today's society. The kiss.
I thought that kiss was wrong.
Yes.
I didn't like it.
Speak out,
Barry. You wanted tongues.
Well, no, it was just... I have no problem with men kissing if it was, you know, Jason Roberts and Matty Taylor, say, who were handsome, ripped gentlemen. But just the whole ginger, wispy, not quite beard, Gary Neville, Paul Scholes-y nature of the kiss in question sort of put me off my lunch.
Right.
It was very tender, though.
It was too tender.
Kiss.
I don't know if it was tender.
There was
the way that from the pictures, Neville grabbed him, it was more of a raw passion. It was bodice ripping.
I think as they broke up, you could sort of as they broke apart, you could tell that Gary was probably still hanging onto the bottom, just the bottom lip between his two, as they slowly came apart. Yeah,
right.
I think it spoke of, you know, a real intimacy there that had obviously been waiting to have a physical aspect to it.
Was this something they'd have practiced on the training ground?
You'd imagine that Gary would be the sort of guy who did do quite a lot of practicing as a young man on his arm, perhaps.
Well,
finally graduating to grown men.
Right, indeed so. Or Paul Scholes, in this case. Now, we're going to come on to the Manchester derby in a bit, because first we want to talk about Arsenal at Wigan. It says on our running order today, number one, laugh at Arsenal, Barry.
Yeah.
Is that taken care of then?
Okay.
Good. Well done, Wigan, we should say as well.
They were excellent, yeah.
Yeah, and not for the first time this season.
Well, look, they've beaten Liverpool, Chelsea, and now Arsenal.
Mm.
And they're still, you know, down at the wrong end of the table. They tried to play football, what some people call the right way, you know, keeping the ball down and nice passing game, which can be difficult at the DW Stadium because it's like a ploughed field most of the time because they play a lot of rugby league on it. And I think it's just not a very good pitch in general anyway. But Arsenal fully deserved to lose yesterday. They went 2-0 up. They were cruising. Complacency set in. And Wigan got a goal back. You see their confidence rising. And I was, you know, I don't like to name drop, James, but I was lucky enough to be in the company of top Guardian columnist Darrow Breen and celebrity gooner watching the second half yesterday. And I said to him, his little face fell when the second goal went in, and then he absolutely dumbfounded when the third one went in. And I said to him, it was a moment I will always treasure.
Mm.
To be fair to Darrow O'Brien, it's not really a little face, though, is it?
Yeah.
Actually, quite a big one.
Made quite a noise when it fell, probably. But the it was an extraordinary collapse by Arsenal to be 2-0 up.
Arsenal's mentality, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when you get to the crunch in the season, you've been given another reprieve, another chance to get within touching distance, and you switch off in this case, and in other instances they've been unable to hold on to leads or fight back when they've come down. And one of the refrains of Wenger this season has been, you know, these results show the strength of our mentality. And you kind of wonder, well, does he mean that, or was he trying to say it so his players started to believe it? Because you couldn't imagine, say, Manchester United ever doing that.
Mm. It was a strange mix. They sort of went from complacent to outright panic in the space of 2 or 3 minutes. And after the first goal, Wenger sent on a couple of subs as well, which I thought smacked of panicking himself, because it suggested that he was worried and he didn't trust the players that were on the pitch to see the game out. And as it occurred, then even the people that he brought on weren't capable of doing so. And it's not that they're lacking in experience, because the centre halves were Sol Campbell and Mikel Silvestre. Mm. So I mean, you know, there should be enough experience there to have got them over the line.
Mm. Well, as many people pointing out, Wenger complaining about the team, but no one to blame but himself. He said years to buy a good keeper and never bothered. Replacing Adebayor, all these many charges have been aired so many times about Wenger. ZoomTube says 5 trophyless Arsenal seasons. Maybe it's time they take the Carling Cup seriously.
Yeah. And that's definitely a good point. Yeah. It's something that Rob Smythe makes all the time, that you've got to win a trophy just to change that mentality. But they're playing the youth team all these years.
But isn't the whole idea of blooding the youth team in the Carling Cup to get them experience so that they can handle occasions just like being 2-0 up against Wigan with 10 minutes to go? So, I don't know.
Well, yeah, but then the other argument is that they, having been blooded in the Carling Cup, rarely make their way through to the senior side for occasions.
And also, where's the disgrace in playing the youth team in the early rounds and then manning up when you get to the serious part of it, you know?
Indeed. Mm. Mm. Now, well, that was the Arsenal game, and there's so much has happened this week that we could devote a whole pod to that extraordinary collapse at the DW Stadium, but move on we must to events at White Hart Lane. Spurs fans, Barry has something he'd like to say. Barry?
Hmm?
You know, Spurs.
Yes. In the past, I may have been slightly critical of Tottenham, and I may have voiced the opinion that I thought they would collapse horribly at the end of the season, particularly in the wake of their abject performance against Sunderland, which we must never, never forget, and their comical exit from the FA Cup, which will live long in the memories of all of those who watched it. But yeah, they've since beaten Arsenal, and now they've absolutely wiped the floor with Chelsea on Saturday. A heroic performance. They bossed them in every department of the field. And the only possible criticism you could level at them, which I will, seeing as I can't stop now, it's too late, was that they were far too profligate in front of goal and should have won possibly 6-7-1 because they were magnificent.
Where were Chelsea? What happened to Chelsea on Saturday?
I blame Deco personally.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I thought they really struggled, Chelsea, and you kind of looked at them on the opposite side, and you had Bale, who was obviously really impressive and breaking between the lines all the time. But you had Pavlyuchenko and Modric getting involved. They were mobile. They were finding the space, and they were really pulling Chelsea apart. Whereas Chelsea, for their part, looked really flat. And I think Deco, for me, he can play the short passes quickly, but the rest of the game, I think, passes him by a lot. And Joe Cole was doing his best, but I think ultimately a lot of his final ball let him down. And so you're actually the only person who was really providing any penetration was Zhirkov, and he was coming from left back, which was, I don't know, I think it was an indictment on the Chelsea team that, you know, to be one of the big four, have a big squad and yet still be looking a little bit like you're at the bare bones compared to a Spurs side who are, you know, missing players like Palacios. That was pretty sad stuff.
Well, they have, of course, been struggling with some major absences, Ashley Cole, of course, and Essien. But it was a remarkably anemic performance. John Terry, can we talk about John Terry?
Hard done by for me.
Mm. No, really? I think they're two definite bookings. And he just seemed to lose in a similar way to Arsenal. He just seemed to lose the plot slightly towards the end, and saw that the game was slipping away from his team, and just got a little bit desperate. I think they were both nailed on bookings. Although he went off saying that he'd twice got the ball, I don't think that they really could have had many complaints, to be honest.
I thought he was I thought the first one was definite, but I would agree. The second one, I thought he was just marching late on the ball. Wasn't a particularly offensive position. That was it. Bale.
That was one that was out wide, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that was he. But then he was going for the ball, knowing that if he didn't get the ball, he would take the man out. And it was a deliberate attempt to stop the attack by fair means or foul. And because he was slightly late there, it turned out to be a foul.
But he had the rights and wrongs of the bookings and the penalties, etc. Aside, he had a rotten game anyway, and he was rescued on various occasions by Zhirkov and just looked not at the races.
I wonder, you know, if an alien came down right. and had just seen this without reputations and had watched this season in the Premier League, if that alien was manager of the England team, would he even be taking John Terry to the World Cup?
And would he be taking Michael Dawson?
Right.
I don't think Terry's been one of the best half dozen English centre-halves in the Premier League this season.
I have to say, Spurs, I mean, you mentioned Gareth Bale, Luka Modric, everyone umming and ahhing over him. Formica Atomica posting in, with a very difficult post to write, I should think. Does Harry Redknapp actually deserve some credit? This, says Formica Atomica, it's very disorientating. It is, isn't it? First, Steve McLaren, we have to now take seriously, and we have to re-evaluate Harry Redknapp, who said this fantastic run of results, because everyone thought Spurs were going to be really flat after that tremendous victory over Arsenal. Instead, they womp Chelsea. What next?
What?
Well, I said womp, but it was regrettable. If we had time, I'd go back and do it
but
again.
But we don't, so...
No.
It's quite forever. Interesting is that, you know, yeah. Modric, Bale, even Bentley to a certain extent, all performing well, and none of these are Harry signings. The thing that he's most reputed for is his, you know, his wheeling and dealing and not, you know, perhaps Defoe has been out of form for a wee while. That the Harry signings aren't the ones who are standing out, but yet his motivational abilities, his ability to get performances from players.
So can he do it against United?
I wouldn't like to call that one.
All right, John, would you like to call that one?
The way that they're playing...
It's at Old Trafford, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they've won the two big games at home, haven't they, this last week? I think if they go out with the same mentality that they showed against Chelsea and against Spurs and, you know, go and actually attack United, then United are vulnerable. And Spurs are playing as well as anybody in the Premier League has played at any point this season, I think.
Really? So this is the best football we've seen in the Premier League this season?
It's as good as anything we've seen in terms of team performances, I think.
Right.
I mean, obviously, it's a two-game run. It's not... And if it was more than a two-game run, then Spurs...
Well, it was a one-game run when we said they slumped.
But if it was more than a two-game run, they'd be title contenders. But clearly, there is that inconsistency there. So.
Right.
The thing is, they could technically afford to lose that game.
The Old Trafford game?
Yeah, the Old Trafford game. Because as long as they get 3 points against Bolton, they could then go to Man City and you know, play for a draw.
All right, Spurs have Man United away, then Bolton at home, then Man City away and Burnley at home. Oof, tough one. Man City, who are now, looks at map, 2 points behind Spurs, are away to Arsenal, home to Villa, at home to Spurs, and then away to West Ham. Very interesting. United, meantime... didn't look all that, despite, you know, all the drama at the end, against City at Eastlands.
Yeah, that was a... It wasn't a very good game. Neither side took control, took it by the scruff of the neck. Roberto Mancini's tactics seemed quite strange in that he sent out what looked like a very attack-minded team and then they didn't attack. They were very cautious. In their previous three games, they'd won, you know, in great style, swashbuckling style, scoring 14 or 15 goals in the process. And the team that went out to face United were unrecognisable from that side.
Do United deserve some credit for that?
I don't... Yeah, well, I mean, they deserve some credit. I don't think they actually had that much to deal with, though. I think possibly Mancini may have been overawed by the occasion. Instead of playing the game, he played the occasion, but... you know, a draw probably would have been a fair result, but City switched off at the end.
They had a massive chance, though, just 5 minutes before the end, when Van der Sar came out. Yeah, and flapped at a corner, I think it was.
And Vidic made that block.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That was a good chance. I mean, you know, I wonder whether Mancini wasn't happy with a point in that game.
Mm.
But also, I think you saw Adam Johnson, who's been another one of these players who's been getting great headlines after, you know, a run of four or five games. He got taken to school by Evra, I think, a little bit, and that blunted them. And when he eventually made the change, brought Vieira into the side, they actually looked a little bit more cohesive, perversely.
Right. Yes. Manchester United's three wins in the Manchester Derby have all come with injury time goals, says producer Ben, who adds, was this result like the Steve Bruce header against Sheffield Wednesday in April 1993, which of course enabled them to, or proved instrumental in them getting that first title in not three decades, 20
seasons. You've got to say about United is they've got that mentality. Yeah. They've got the mentality that Arsenal don't have, and the mentality you'd question of Chelsea. Because Chelsea, you know, haven't been able to consistently get a run of wins together. United, a poor side this season by their standards. They don't have the ability they've had in previous years, but they've still got that winning mentality.
So do you think that they...
I just really, really hate Man United. So I just don't want them to win.
Right.
But I think if I had to pick a team out.
If you were an alien landing on this planet from another one
who was interested in football.
Who was interested in
not world domination, yeah, I'd go for United.
Right. Barry?
What?
You're an alien, Barry. Oh. You've recently arrived on this globe.
Yes.
On this orb. Which team of humanoids do you think would be walking away from with the curious silverware come the end of the season?
Oh, this season?
Yes.
Who will win the league is
that's
what
right,
you're asking
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
I'd probably go for Chelsea.
Right? You think they're going to hang on?
Yeah.
All right. John Ashdown?
Am I an alien as well?
He's already been an alien. He's the England right, manager.
So you're from Yorkshire. Twice. I think that's,
that's, no,
that's a separate category, isn't it? Yeah.
Considering we do have someone in, or the three guests in the pod are from Norwich, Yorkshire, and County Offaly, respectively. This interplanetary riff, it really is unnecessary.
All right.
I'll say Chelsea just to wrap that up.
Thanks very much. Wrap it up, we will. That's it for part one. Coming up in a second or two, Dr. Sid in Spain, and all the excitements and drama, frankly, of Sunday night at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. Dr. Sid, are you there, sir?
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. Another weekend in the unwatchable Liga. Was there any reaction, actually, in the Spanish press to Wenger describing your top teams as playing unwatchable football?
There's a little bit. There was one or two kind of pickups on it, but more than anything else, the focus was on him suggesting that Cesc wouldn't leave rather than specifically on that comment, although it has been picked up by one or two places and actually dealt with reasonably sensibly in that it hasn't really seen a knee-jerk reaction of people saying, well, Wenger's just an idiot or Wenger's just bitter or whatever, which is what you would probably expect in truth. Instead, one or two people have said, actually, Wenger's got a point.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Bear in mind that this morning, Valencia, having been beaten by Real Madrid last night, are now, if my math doesn't fail me, 24 points behind Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm. Well.
So he's got a point.
He has indeed. Listen, we'll talk a little bit about the Champions League and Barcelona's trip to Inter in a minute or two. First off, though, the build-up isn't going particularly well for them with this goalless draw they had with Espanyol and Real Madrid winning and thus narrowing the gap at the top of the Liga.
Yeah, 7 days after it seemed that the league title was done and dusted and it was all over. It's not done and dusted. I think, in a way, we shouldn't have assumed that it was all over because there were still six games to go, now five. Barcelona had three very difficult away trips. And I personally think this was the hardest of them. And I was saying last week, and I've been saying this to anyone who will listen, in fact, that the next three games immediately after Clásico were the key ones. And the key really wasn't so much Barcelona as whether Madrid would react to it, whether they would believe it was all over after Clásico. They beat Almeria on Thursday night. They beat Valencia last night. Barcelona drew 0-0 with Espanyol. Really tough, really aggressive game. And Espanyol, I thought, handled Barcelona very well. There may well be a lesson for Jose Mourinho in that. And yeah, that means that it's now only one point between Barcelona and Real Madrid with five games to go. And Barcelona still have to go away to both Villarreal and Sevilla.
What is the lesson for Jose Mourinho?
Well, lesson for Jose Mourinho, I think, in terms of the way Espanyol went about it, is that you can get off underneath Barcelona, you can get under their skin, you can wind them up, and more importantly, you can snuff them out if you're very, very aggressive, very quick, and you get men, particularly around Xavi Hernandez and Leo Messi throughout the course of the game. The thing is, from Inter's point of view, is that there's a couple of difficulties. One is that Barcelona didn't have Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and I felt that they really lacked presence up front. Zlatan should be fit because he came on for the last 7 or 8 minutes or so. He should be fit, Inter, so maybe that will be different. Also, of course, the other difficulty from Inter's point of view is that this is two-legged, so they may well get something in Milan, but then they've got to go to the Camp Nou. My feeling, you know, is that Jose Mourinho would be absolutely delighted to have a 0-0 in Milan and then go for the 1-1 draw away.
Mm. I think that's probably quite a fair reading of this first leg coming up on Tuesday. Things, as I say, didn't get off to the best of starts for Barcelona, who not only had that goalless draw on whichever night it was over the
Saturday,
weekend with Espanyol, but also then have to take a coach all the way to Milan. Apparently their coach actually left Barcelona 45 minutes before the airport reopened anyway.
Yeah, they were pretty unlucky on this, Barcelona. They decided on Saturday night when they were discussing what they should do that they should just bite the bullet and go and not run any risk, because yesterday afternoon all the Spanish airports were closed. They all opened again. Well, some of them opened at 3:25 yesterday afternoon. Some opened again at 8 o'clock in the evening. Mostly it was the northern airports in Spain, as you can imagine, that had real problems, Cantabria, Asturias and so on. But Barcelona reopened. So too did Mallorca and Valencia and one or two others. Barcelona decided not to take any risks and to set off. As they set off, they're driving around the north, obviously, of Spain, through the south of France and into Italy. There was a suggestion at one stage that they might, when they saw this piece of news, turn back and get a flight, but they'd set off and they went for it. They stopped in Cannes overnight after a 9-hour drive. They reckon there's going to be another 4.5 hours today. I think they're actually due to arrive. It's around about 1 o'clock Spanish time. They're due to arrive in Milan in the next hour and a half or so. Two coaches set off. They were caught in traffic. And I tell you what, if I'd been a Barcelona fan and I was going to the Milan game anyway, you would blatantly have got your car and followed the team coach all the way, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
As some journalists have done, by the way. There's some great footage on one of the Spanish TV stations who are basically following Barcelona in this kind of convoy on the motorway.
Ooh, what, bums hanging out the back window, that kind of thing, is it?
It's not quite that bad. And signs saying, "My name's Dave, what's yours?" and stuff, yeah.
Sid, hello, it's Paul McInnes here, Sid. I hope Paul. You are well. I was just wondering if there's been much response to the Fernando Torres news over in Spain.
Yeah, there has. The main response, obviously, is there's two sides to this. The first one is that there's, I think, a kind of relaxed attitude, in the sense that there's a feeling that he should make it for the Spain squad. And he's been told by the director of sport at the Spanish Football Federation that he will be included in the squad if he's fit, that he doesn't need to worry about missing these last few games in that sense. And then the other thing that's really created a reaction here is the fact that he's going to miss the Atletico Madrid game again, because, of course, he missed it last time Liverpool came to Madrid, and he was forced to sit in the stands as well when Atletico went to Anfield, and he's going to miss out again. And I really do think it's a real pity for Fernando Torres, because I know a lot of players pay lip service to the importance of their clubs to them, but Fernando Torres is genuinely a big Atletico Madrid fan, and I think he'll be genuinely devastated to miss this. And Atletico Madrid fans are as well, because while, of course, there's a sporting side to this, which is great, Liverpool have lost their best player, there is, I think, an emotional side, which means that most Atletico Madrid fans are really disappointed that Torres won't play.
All right. Thanks, Sid, so much. Sergei Russia, just so you know, says he watched you and heard you on Al Jazeera commentating on...
In Arabic?
No, apparently you were doing it in English. Now we're back in the second half in Madrid with Sid Lowe. Nice remarks. I have one question, please. Your voice on TV is much nicer than on the pod. Why? And he wants to ask producer Ben, does the voice of Jimbo differ considerably in real life? Ben? Ben's nodding his head. Which is better, pod or real life, Ben? Really? Better in the pod? There you go.
Well, in real life, you've got that stutter and the lisp. And
right, the squeaky.
Yeah, and the sort of Bristolian West Country accent.
The halitosis.
Yeah.
It's
halitosis you can't hear, I hope. You can smell it.
But yeah. Jimbo's is so bad, you can actually hear it. You can hear all the little bacteria shouting at each other, jockeying for position as they come flying out of his face hole.
There is one thing that probably should be added, I suppose, here in terms of this specific question, is obviously on the pod I come to you down a phone line as opposed to through supposedly crystal clear microphone and headset.
Very good point, Sid. Very good point. Listen, enjoy the week, and we'll get your reaction if we made to Tuesday's spectacular 8-goal showdown at the San Siro on Thursday.
That's really wishful thinking, but let's hope so, eh?
Excellent. Inter, of course, preparing for... Yes, Paul McInnes, you're not going anywhere. It is Serie A time.
I want to hide under the table now.
Inter prepared for this monumental clash with a 2-0 victory over old rivals Juventus. Don't know if you saw this game, Paul?
No. I had the in-laws
Have you seen Maicon's goal?
I have seen Maicon's goal.
All right, cracking, wasn't
it? Yeah, it is great, and he's a great player. And Inter, look, a phenomenal side. And I know I said that I couldn't see any Italian sides winning anything in Europe forever. And
well, they haven't won anything yet.
And there's a real possibility that Inter might win the Champions League.
There's a real possibility they might end up with, to borrow Mourinho's own expression, with which he taunted all the other teams last year in Serie A, zero titoli, no titles, because, Barcelona, it's a tough ask.
They are a tough team to play.
They are in the Coppa Italia finals, where they're probably going to be taking on Roma. And in the meantime, they've lost, as you all know, the... lead in Serie A to Roma. Now, they'd retaken the lead because they played their game against Juventus on Friday night and then put the pressure firmly on Roma for Roma's game Sunday night, the Rome Derby. doesn't get any bigger than that in Rome. And a cracking second half it was. First half wasn't very good. And God bless ESPN for showing Motherwell Dundee through the first half and then coming to it, you know, at half-time. And, well, that wasn't entirely their fault, because it was actually because the Italians had moved the kickoff time because they were worried about crowd unrest. And rightly so, because there was a lot of unrest in the crowd. Anyway, you'll be delighted to know that Roma won 2-1. The key here, we were saying credit, hail Ave Tinkerman and all that.
Ave
Tinkerman, because after a very lacklustre first half, particularly from Roma, he went, you know what, Totti and De Rossi, you're off. He put on Menez and Tadei, a Brazilian and a Frenchman. This is a huge thing, because De Rossi and Totti, the complete heroes, legends, etc. But as Ranieri said, they just seem to get too tense about the derby. And in fact, during the week, he'd been trying out a team without them, because it is such a big thing. He
can
said, casting around the room.
Barry, are you kind of doing some kind of yoga mantra in your head? There is a blank expression that suggests you're in another place.
No, I've got, you know, those glasses that Homer Simpson wore when he was on jury duty.
More fool
made
you.
Made it look as if he wasn't
more
asleep.
More fool you, because this was one of the it was a terrific second half performance. The thing was, Lazio had a penalty right after, they were 1-0 up at halftime, had a penalty immediately to start the second half. Saved by Roma's keeper, Giulio Sergio, brilliant save. And then almost immediately, Roma had their own. Vucinic scored that. He then had a free kick, which he walloped into the net. I have to say that Lazio's keeper didn't help very much by ducking as the ball flew
ducked.
Past him.
Ducked.
Yeah, you can see him kind of... I mean, he wouldn't have
That's
probably
not what
got
you want from a goalkeeper, is it?
Not especially, no. But anyway, and then and thus Roma ran out 2-1 winners amidst all sorts of scuffles. There was a lot of players grabbing at one another and kicking at one another and red cards and all that sort of thing. And Totti then, in traditional fashion, went over to the Lazio end and put both thumbs down, as if to say, you're going down, buddies, because it leaves them just 3 points from the relegation zone.
You get suspended for 6 months for doing that in the UK.
Well, Eddie Reha, the Lazio manager, suggested that he get a 10-game ban. Totti's not new to this kind of thing. He famously once went over to the Curva Nord, the Lazio end, with a T-shirt after a big derby win that said... I think it was the derby win, actually, when Lazio had been 9 points clear at the top of the table going into the last seven games. And in that seven games, they got walloped by Roma and ended up losing the title to Milan on the last day. But anyway, that day, Totti went up with a T-shirt that basically said, I've given you another enema. Which, it's a curious expression. But anyway...
Can I ask you a question about Mourinho?
Yeah, I do.
So, would it be considered a failure if he fails to win the league but gets to the Champions League final?
Oh, interesting. No, I think the Champions League final would probably trump the disappointment of missing out on the title. Interesting.
Because, I mean, you know, I'm not sure he's particularly bothered about the league. It doesn't seem, you know, the amount of jip he gives to the press and stuff, it seems that...
Yeah, well, he's not a popular man, but were he to get past Barcelona, that would be a real fillip to the Italian game in general. It'd be ironic, though, if he got past Barcelona and then lost to Bayern or a French side in the final. Anyway, speaking of French sides and that, I'll just say that, you know, in the title run, Inter have the slightly tougher... running of fixtures. They've got Atalanta next weekend. Atalanta battling for survival. But Roma away to Sampdoria, who are now fourth and have just beaten Milan. And we could rabbit on about Serie A and the fact that Leonardo...
Crowd trouble the Rome Derby, which Stabbing. Were allowed to find entertaining because it happened foreign.
Well, it was quite serious. A family driving by had their car set fire to.
Ooh.
Yeah, and there were some stabbings. One guy got stabbed in the throat. And was in critical condition. It was really. This is why the police wanted it played in daylight, because they've had nighttime games and they've involved police stations being laid siege to by combined troops of Lazio and Roma fans, and it's not much fun. Yeah, that's the downside to the terrific.
Did you find that entertaining in the end, Barry?
I thought it was an interesting sociological.
Anyway, I'm moving on now. Lee Marvin is my hero, posting in saying, can you give us the skinny on what seems to be the inevitable departure of Leonardo from Milan? Is it or is it not happening? Does it seem to be happening? And also, those rumours about Pata being sold to balance the books, well, it does seem there's a very strong possibility of that as well. Although Marcello Lippi is rumoured to be the new man in at Milan, and I can't imagine him going in with the top young starlet Pata going the other way.
There was one rumour in Tutto Sport over the weekend.
You want to read Tutto Sport?
Juventus swapping Gianluigi Buffon and 15 million for Nemanja Vidic.
Right. Who gets the 15 million?
Manchester United.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a bum deal. Right, anyway, now I've got to move on because producer Ben is...
It would be if you had anything to do with it.
Barry Glendenning, that one's end of season, off the cuff type there. Buffon, it would be a bum deal if any viewers didn't. Yep. I think we all know what you're saying there. You're not wrong either. Bayern are taking on Lyon in the other semi-final. Bayern, a 7-0 victory over Hannover to maintain their two-point lead at the top of the Bundesliga. And Lyon, meanwhile, drew 2-2 with Bordeaux. It's going to be an interesting game, that, and we're not going to comment on it because we're not really in a position to, are we? The Bayern, Lyon, no. Hamburg lost. They're taking on Fulham, as we all know. And Atletico Madrid lost as well and had their plane struck by lightning. Fulham. Their last two games have been against Liverpool and Wolves, and they've had just one shot on goal in both. Can they step it up against Hamburg?
Fulham are amazing. Fulham are my team of the year.
Are they?
Yeah. Mainly because I've got nothing to do on Thursday nights and I've been watching them in the Europa League. But right. I just think they're a great team. You're not interested in that, are you?
No, I am, actually.
Fulham not big enough for you.
No, I like Fulham.
Everyone likes Fulham.
Everyone
They're
likes
like Oasis. Everyone likes Oasis. Or well, they used to, anyway. No, they don't.
Now they don't. All right. On to part three.
Or cake. Everyone likes cake.
There are people, Barry, and I know this is going to sound shocking, who don't like cake. There's Name people two. Out there who don't like all sorts of stuff. And, he said... his attention drawn to the clock that's ticking by the appearance of a man who wants to do something in this pod in a matter of 13 minutes. In a matter of moments, we're going to be addressing your other team of the year, Paul.
The Fulham of the East.
Exactly, as they're known. And that's Norwich, viewers, as we pluck up our courage, hold our noses and dive down into the depths of the lower leagues. On we move to what looks like the final page of today's Football Weekly. It says here, Norwich back up to Championship.
Hurrah.
Proud, proud day for you against Charlton this weekend. Paul, were you there?
No. Ah. I went to the Leighton Orient game on Tuesday night where we got beat and everybody was suddenly pooing their pants about our prospect.
Right.
And no, on Saturday I had the in-laws round, so I was out esquiring them. Mm-hmm. Is that right? All right, squiring them around town. But no, I mean, I don't want to go on about Norwich. It's not all about Norwich. We have been great this season.
Does squiring them not mean you were trying to...
get them into bed?
Yeah, which...
Well, that's what I was trying to do.
You are from Norwich then, which wouldn't be unusual behaviour.
Paul,
trying to seduce a family
you
member.
You say you've been great all season. I mean, when you look back at how the Championship started with that walloping at home.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a beautiful story because that... It was a defeat masterminded by Paul Lambert, and we went and said we'll have a bit of that. We hired him, and practically, I think after about the first 10 games, we were averaging about 1.2 or 1.4 points a game. The next 25 games, we averaged 2.5 points a game.
Right,
and that, you know, that's pretty near three, as I'm sure we'll all agree. And we've been really strong. And the reason I say we're the Fulham of the East is because I think our team isn't particularly skillful. We've got some good players, Grant Holt, Houlihan, Martin, Corey Smith, whose shirt I have. But we're organised. And
which one of them would you kiss?
Which one of them would I kiss? Depends what kind of kiss you're talking about. I'd give Grant Holt a peck on two cheeks.
Gary Doherty?
Gary Doherty would get an affectionate rub of the knuckles on the scalp. Ooh. Tongues with Wes.
All right.
Tongues with Wes Houlihan.
Paul Lambert, the next big thing in management, is he sticking around or not?
Well, here's my theory. I don't think he'll go back to Scotland.
Right.
I mean, Scotland's a dead league. I don't know why anybody would want to go up there who wants to have a good career in management. Controversial, I know, but I think he said it himself, to be honest, if you look at the remarks. Yeah, he says there's only two, you know, there's only however eight games a season that matter, however many times you play Rangers, and that's it. The rest of it just doesn't really add up to a whole lot of beans. I'm sorry, Dundee United, but it's probably true. And I think, you know, Norwich have 25,000 regular. That kind of puts us up into the middle tier of the Premiership in terms of attendance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a long-term project. He can prove his mettle, take us up to the Premiership. Then by that time, Moyes might be in at Man United and he gets the Everton job. I don't know, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
I think if you're a manager, there's only about six clubs that are really, you know, seven clubs in the top tier that will really... you can push on and hope to kind of do well in Europe with. So why not stick with the Canaries, Paul?
Well, indeed. Why not stick with the Canaries? In other League One news, They are in League One, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Not anymore.
In other League One news, Leeds lost 3-2 to Gillingham, but they're still in pole position to get second spot because Millwall lost and Swindon drew. Paul Ince resigned again from the MK Dons. Why, John? Why?
Because they're having to cut their cloth anew for next season, which means serious budget cuts.
And he's not the tailor.
The way I read it was that he is very ambitious and his words were he can't take the team forward in the way he would like, which suggests a season of struggle, which he perhaps isn't that keen on. Basically, their promotion chances next season will be slim, and being an average League One manager is perhaps not on his agenda.
Right. It's difficult for him, though, isn't it? Because having been up to the top and it not gone well for him, will he have a lot of clubs interested in him?
I doubt it. He might struggle for a while, but we were just talking about Steve Cotterill before we came on air, who is the manager of Notts County, who's just been promoted from League 2 to League 1. And he's a man who we were like, okay, so he was at Burnley and was touted as the hot young manager. And then we were like, oh, what's he been doing in between times? And I think he's had a few assistant jobs and lower profile things. But, you know, it's taken him a while to come back again.
He was at Sunderland, wasn't he?
He was Howard Wilkinson's number two when Howard Wilkinson was appointed as Peter Reid's successor, much to the amazement of everybody in the world. Didn't go so well for them.
But Notts County, a ridiculous season it's been, you know, the Sven experiment and the Sol experiment and all that. But despite it all, they've ridden out the storm and up they go.
And ex-convict Lee Hughes, yeah.
I saw the Notts County team at Cheltenham on one of the days, and Lee Hughes was keeping a sort of a low profile, as you'd expect from him, by wearing the loudest, most garish suit I've ever seen while cavorting about in front of a female bookmaker, trying to sort of mug for giggles.
Oh, lovely. Rochdale, promoted for the first time in 40 years.
Yeah, it's their second in about 103 years as well.
On a roll.
It's two contrasting promotions over the weekend in League Two. Rochdale's incredibly popular, I think, with the football community. Obviously, they've been in that bottom division for 37 years, banging along the bottom there. They're owned by a chap who grew up 10 miles from the ground, who made his fortune, of what there is of his fortune, in making and installing heating systems for churches. And he's a lifelong fan, and has basically run the club in a very sensible way, partly because there isn't
heating
a great deal of money.
Heating systems for churches?
Yeah, that's how... I mean, so there can't have been that much
sell
money.
Those,
I think you maybe have to do two or three a year, because they're probably quite expensive.
Does he do mosques at all?
I don't know. But maybe he's spreading out into other religious
You'd
buildings.
Like to think so. Yeah. You know, in business terms, that's where the growth
industry is. Yeah.
Yeah. Pagan ceremonies as well, because you need them, you're outdoors. Can get quite chilly in the winter.
I think very much they'd take a dim view of artificially heated ceremonies, Pagan. I think you'd really want to be, you know, lit by the moon and...
get your heat from your wicker man.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, his name's Chris Dunphy, and he's run the club very sensibly for 3 years, 4 years, I think he's been chairman. And Keith Hill, the manager's, run the club very sensibly as manager. The thing is that Rochdale have had lots of lights at the end of their sort of 37 years tunnel, and every time it's turned out, the lights have turned out to be a manager's car from a rival team arriving in the car park to take away their best players. And it happened again in January when Will Buckley left for Watford for $300,000 just so they could keep going really to the end of the season. And in previous years, it's really derailed them, but this year they've maintained their form, and they're up, and I think everybody's very, very happy. Whereas Notts County, on the other hand, are a very unpopular promotion, certainly with other sides in League Two, who over the weekend have been accused of cheating by other chairmen. And in fact, the Notts County chairman has released an open letter today denying that they've cheated.
Basically, cheating in what way?
Well, basically, there's a salary cap in League Two, which states that your salary can only be 60% of your turnover. Which once Munto Finance left in January, February, whenever it was, meant that Notts County were therefore over the salary cap. And the punishment for that is a transfer embargo, which doesn't really have a huge impact on a team that has already got quite a strong squad. But that's what they're operating under now, even though the chairman now says that he's put money in to mean their turnover is enough, so they're now within that salary cap.
I'm not sure turnover works that way, does it?
Well, that's what I thought. I mean, if you just... injecting money and it doesn't really count. But anyway, that's the rule. And so a lot of people are sort of slightly unhappy in the unfairness of what they've done. But they've done well to recover from, you know, a really turbulent time. I think Cotterill's won 12 of 14 games in charge, something like that.
All right. John, listen, we've only got 3 minutes before we are ejected into the inky blackness of space. So do tell us about the game you went to up in the Championship this weekend.
Well, I was at the Steel City Derby, Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough. So, yeah, I've had to have lots of baths since to try and get the stench. Oh, no, sorry, Wednesday fans, that's entirely unfair. And it was a great atmosphere, great occasion. The United season's over because their playoffs, their tiny, tiny playoff chances went on Saturday when Swansea won. But Wednesday are in serious relegation trouble, and the chance to give the blue half of the city a kick when they're down is a decent second prize for
you. Although, wouldn't you miss the derby? Wouldn't you prefer to have them?
Well, this is they had a survey on one of the biggest independent United sort of websites asking the question: would you like to see Wednesday go down, stay up, or don't care? And 97% wanted them to go down. And I'm entirely in agreement with that as a fan, obviously. But being there on the Saturday, it was a great occasion. You know, 35,000 people inside Hillsborough. Tremendous atmosphere. And you would miss it because even though there are derbies against Doncaster and Barnsley, they're not quite the same, obviously. Though watching Leeds against Wednesday in League One next season, I think would put a smile on many a United fan's face.
Excellent. Very good. All right, well, that is it for today's Football Weekly. We'll be back on Thursday with a roundup of the Champions League semi-final, first legs, of course, and all sorts of other things I shouldn't wonder as well. In the meantime, many thanks, Barry Glendinning.
You're welcome.
John Ashton.
Cheers.
And Paul McGuinness. Thanks, Paul. And you, producer Ben, and you, the listener, as ever. Speak to you on Thursday if you're there. And for now, for all of us, it's goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.